Today I'm interviewing Judith Rosenthal, a 37-year-old senior financial advisor and the breadwinner of her family. I met Judith at a feminist talk at the 92nd Street Y, and she asked a question afterwards that I thought was very interesting. Can you tell me what that question was?
I think I was asking a question about how my generation, or rather women breadwinners of my generation, are being depicted in the media. And I was raising a question, but also raising sort of an objection to how we're being represented. And I was taking issue with the fact that most of how we're being portrayed, or how the situation, rather, is being portrayed, is with a focus on the men. So it's typically, you know, what you read or hear is, oh, the poor emasculated man, and isn't it so difficult the way that he's struggling with how his wife makes more money than he does? And, or, here's an observation, men have been losing their jobs and are being laid off because of the recession and are now stuck being the stay-at-home dad. So I think the question really was, you know, what can we do to change the way that women breadwinners of my generation are being represented, and or what is the way we can start a new dialogue about the woman's situation as opposed to the circumstances of the man?
Can you talk a little bit about your family and what your situation is personally?
Yes. So I have, you know, the big job in a financial services firm, and I have a little child. Her name's Jane. She was born last summer, so she's going to be 1 year here shortly. And my husband is staying at home with her full-time. So we made a decision that, for a variety of reasons, not including financial, that he would be best suited to stay at home with our daughter.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of reaction do you get for that?
There are different reactions depending on who it is. Mm-hmm. But in general, I'd say my experience, then the people are very surprised by that. You know, it's sort of this, really, you know, wow, tell me more about that. It's so unique, you know. So that's sort of the one thing that I've really noticed, is that it's shocking, you know, or really noticeable to people, as opposed to being, you know, just a given like any other family decision would be. And the other interesting part of the reaction is this assumption, I think, that's made about our decision, which is that it was, you know, financial. And, you know, like someone said to me recently, oh, so was your husband an artist? As if that would mean, you know, that he would be more inclined to give up his career or something like that. So I think that what's been remarkable about the reaction are those two things. One, the assumption that it's financial, and two, just the fact that it's so surprising.
Because we still think in terms of the man having the more important career pretty much no matter what.
That's right. I think that's right. And I'm disappointed about that. I feel that that's like still that there's a bias there, or that, you know, it's time to be in the century.
Mm-hmm.
time to get into the century and see that there are women who are making money, and women who are in evolved marriages, if that's the way to describe it, you know, who are in a marriage with someone where there are things that are being discussed, and what's best for the family is really an open discussion, and they're working it out together.
When we spoke before this interview, you mentioned that women as primary breadwinners is being missed as another iteration of the women's movement.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's this sort of interesting tone that women of the generation who pioneered the women's movement can take in their discussions with women of my generation. And the tone is, you know, sort of this, well, you've dropped the ball and you're not taking it forward, and your generation is very apathetic, and, you know, shame on you for not fighting harder, being more angry about the rights that you don't still have. And, you know, what I would just counter to that is that it's thanks to the women's movement that I haven't lived in a time when I've had as many limitations. And so I have had the opportunity to excel in a career. And I've grown up in a time where it's been something that I've learned, or maybe it's just the way that I was raised in my own family and has nothing to do with the women's movement. I don't know. I'm not an anthropologist, and I don't feel like I'm in a position to observe something like this. But in my situation, it's been, you know, you can do what you want, and you can have it all. If you want to have children and a career and a family, then, you know, you go for it, and you can do it. Whatever you set your mind to, that's what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's missed is that this is, that it's a struggle. In other words, you know, here I am in this sort of fully reversed role set up in my marriage and in my family, and there isn't a generation previous to look at to say, you know, we'll see how they did it, and there's no one to take after, and it's not that common, so there isn't even really like an established community of women that I found, at least, who are sharing this experience, or where the conversation is being facilitated. So it's just sort of this feeling of like, well, here I am, I'm out there, and what am I supposed to do in this situation or that situation when I don't have anyone to look up to and or talk to in the community?
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting, you know, you say that there's been this idea that women can have it all, and as you say, it's a struggle, but I think, in a way, families can have it all. Maybe not a woman herself can have the career and be the primary caretaker and do everything else, but if she has a partner and if that partnership allows for flexibility and true collaboration, then a couple can have it all as a family.
I think that's absolutely right. I think saying you can have it all is like really not true. I mean, that's to me a lie. I mean, and there's been this other, you know, cliche now that's gotten more popular, that you can have it all, just not at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever heard that one.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe you can have it all. I don't believe that, I think all is subjective, so I don't know what all is, but you do have to give up certain things. I mean, you do have to compromise, and you do have to let it go that you are not going to be there for every single bedtime, that you are not going to be there for every single time somebody falls and hurts themselves. You're not going to have enough vacation time. There's never going to be enough vacation time to spend with your child. I mean, just, you can't really have it all. Each person has to take on their particular role, and each person has to carry weight. But, you know, I will say that's not necessarily a negative. I don't see that as a negative. I just think, see it as something that has to be negotiated in the family. Who's good at what? And are people happy? Is each person happy with the roles that they have agreed to take on? And having open communication as you go. I mean, just because you've made one decision at one time doesn't mean it will always last. Once you install a husband in a role and a wife in a particular role, it doesn't mean that you never talk about it again. I mean, you've got to always be checking in with the other one to say, how are you doing? You know, how is it? And if it's not good, you know, more than, you know, a couple of weeks in a row, it's time to revisit it. So I just think there's this kind of need for people to understand that you have to be constantly negotiating in a family, at least in my experience, to make sure that everybody is happy and is being served in the best way that they can be served. And it's a really like a team effort and a collaboration between the husband and the wife, I think. And I say to my husband a lot, he'll say to me, oh, I just am so impressed with your success. I mean, you're just doing so well, and how I really am just so proud of you for your accomplishments at work. And I'll say, well, listen, you know, I couldn't be doing it without you. And if I was doing it without you, it wouldn't mean anything. Like, all the success in the world wouldn't mean anything if I didn't have you. So it's a team, it really is a team effort. Both people need to really be supporting each other and understanding how important the other one is.
Are there issues that come up with being in sort of the traditionally masculine role? Like issues of questioning your femininity?
Yeah, no, that's a hard one, but it's a good one. I would say that being the provider and bearing the financial burden for me has been a very masculine experience. And that's not to say that I haven't chosen it or that I'm not okay with it. But the challenges for me are the fact that I don't, at times, I don't know exactly where there's room for me to be a woman or to be feminine. And I've had questions about, you know, what is feminine, what is masculine, or what makes me feminine and what makes me masculine. But this idea that, you know, I go to work and I'm tough and I'm in sales and I'm, you know, scoring deals and rainmaking all day long, and then I have to come home and I have to sort of put on a different hat so that I can feel soft and vulnerable and needy and that I can feel like I can depend on someone else. And those are the things that, by the way, make me feel feminine. I would say, like, you know, when I'm feeling feminine, it's when I'm feeling soft and vulnerable and like I need my husband.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the challenge for me has been more about making the transition, you know, between, like, in my day, between what I'm doing, like, activity-wise during my work day and then, you know, what I have to do in my own head and mind and spirit on my way home so that when I get there, I'm not that person anymore. Or, you know, I just can notice that if I haven't done a good job at making that transition, I can, you know, sort of go days without really feeling like a woman. It's hard to really describe. It's hard to articulate. But.
And do you feel like you have to battle the cultural images of what masculinity and femininity are?
Yes, within my own head.
How do you do that?
I mean, it's just a constant question, you know, like, I think about, you know, my husband and what I find attractive or what I have found attractive about him and in the past, and, I mean, even just before we had Jane, even before it was an issue of parenting and even before it was this issue of who was going to be the stay-at-home person, you know, my husband was never, like, a hard charger. It wasn't his personality to be, you know, driven and ambitious. But the things that made him attractive were things that, you know, about his communication style and or just what he had to offer in terms of emotional support and openness. And so, and those things have traditionally been more attributed to women. I mean, those have been, like, feminine qualities, I think. That's what I've been socialized to understand them to be. And so even within my own mind, it's this constant questioning of, you know, what makes me a woman and what makes him a man, or what makes me attracted to him because he's a man, and or what makes me attractive to him that I'm feminine or that I'm, I don't know, it's just this kind of internal questioning that's kind of constant where, you know, I think I have my own stereotypes that I'm getting over. What makes who?
I think society definitely dictates that we women are supposed to want driven and ambitious men.
Yes.
And I wonder, do you ever get tripped up there? Do you ever think, wait, maybe that's what I'm supposed to want?
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's not what I want.
It's not what actually makes you happy.
No, and so it's sort of way that I have to remind myself of who I married and why.
Mm-hmm.
And what, you know, what he offers me is what I needed, you know, is more of what I needed than any ambition. You know, it's why my marriage, it worked. It's why it was a good choice in a man for me to marry, because it's what I needed. But I feel sad about that. I feel sad that the way we live or the way that we're socialized is that I have to have a question about that. Because I don't think that's manufactured by the marriage itself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you're probably fighting being brainwashed by every single advertisement out there.
Yeah.
That's trying to tell you this is what men and women should be. And it's like, you know, you're in a situation that works and you're happy and the culture hasn't caught up with that yet.
Right.
Which I think is really destructive for people. I think that you're pretty strong to be able to resist those messages, but I don't know if many of us are that strong.
Mm-hmm. It's like people who I know who are women who are dating and or not dating or having a hard time dating will say, how am I going to know when it's the right one? Or how do I even know what I'm looking? I mean, I just don't even know when I find him, will I even know? You know, some of these interesting questions, like open questions when you're single and haven't found that person, you know. And my advice to my friends that are looking was and is that when you find the person, it, you know, it feels easy and it feels right, and it will be guaranteed to not look anything like you thought it was going to look. And to that last statement, it's in your head, you know, whatever you're imagining has a lot to do with your background and the society that we're living in. Like, I've been working in financial services for my whole entire career. So I pictured, you know, my husband to be that kind of a guy, and we all know who I'm talking about. They're in a Brooks Brothers suit with wire-rimmed glasses and hard charging all day and carrying a leather briefcase and playing golf on a weekend. That's who I pictured.
Right.
And that's not who I found, and thank God.
Mm-hmm.
Or thank whoever. Because that's not what I needed. So anyway, it's just an interesting thing that, you know, I kind of have to go through on my own, and even in my own family and my friends and the circle of my network, having to deal with that reaction that we talked about in the very beginning, that, oh, really? He stays home all day? Like, who stays with your daughter? Mm-hmm. Oh, my husband does. Or what does your husband do? He stays home with Jane. Really? No. Is that all he does? You know? So, it can be challenging. And then, you know, the other part of the challenge is what goes on in your own mind about yourself. You know, am I a good mother if I don't stay home with my daughter? Does she still recognize me when I get home? Does she know me? Is she going to know me? Are we going to have a good relationship if I'm not the one staying home? What is she going to think of me that I, you know, needed this other thing in my life? Is she going to feel that she wasn't enough for me?
What kind of role models did you have with your own mother and within that generation for the feminist movement? Were they people that you felt like pioneered the place that you're at right now?
Well, it's a great question. I'd say yes and no. My mother worked my whole childhood. My father was training to be the successful surgeon that he is, and so there was this really long period of his process of his education. And my mother was supporting us financially. At least that was my understanding. And so, you know, there she was getting dressed up in that Brooks Brothers suit I referenced earlier with the pinstripes on it and a pair of pantyhose, getting in the car and commuting to work every day in financial services. So she certainly was working in the 80s and, you know, 70s and 80s and was providing money to our family. You know, and I came home with the key around my neck after school and waited for my mom to get home from work. So my whole childhood was all about my parents' career. And I saw my mother as really until very, very recently, I mean, within the past 5 years, my understanding of that was that she was, you know, the poster child of the women's movement. But what I have realized more recently is that in the end, it was really more, I mean, just as I've grown up and matured and had my own more of my own life, I realized that was more on behalf of my father, that the career aspect of my mother's life was less about her own ambition and more sort of in support of my dad's career.
How so?
It was the deal they had. You know, my dad wanted to be a surgeon, and so somebody needed to help out because he wasn't going to be making much money while he was going to school.
Right.
And that school took a long, long time. It was like 12 years of my life and before I was born a few years. So it was just a long, long time. So that was the deal they had.
So did you feel like even though your mother was the one making the money, his was the important career,
yeah,
right, that she had to underwrite in a way?
Exactly. And I sort of had a different perspective on it because in the end, sadly, my parents divorced.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, through that experience, you know, I was able to recognize that aspect of the failure became more clear.
Right.
You know, that they had this deal, and this deal was that she was going to work and help, and then they were going to live happily ever after, and she wouldn't have to work anymore once he hit the jackpot.
So do you think she would have been better off prioritizing her own career as much as the two of them prioritized his?
I think they both would have been better off having had help potentially negotiating their relationship better. I mean, I think that they both lost out in their limited way that they were able to communicate about their own experiences. So, I mean, a marriage is a complex thing, and I wasn't in their marriage. But from my observation, you know, my mother kind of compromised more than she should have or could have or maybe wanted to. You know, and there's a way she didn't take care of herself. She took care of my dad really, really well. So, I mean, that's kind of the, that was kind of the background. And then sort of to go back to your question, you know, how have I been influenced by that? I think there are ways that I've rejected that. So in, as opposed to saying, here's a role model and I'm embracing that role model, and like, here's a role model and here's how I'm not going to let that happen to me. So going back to the dating example, it's like when you're dating, you know, there's that question, are you learning more about what you want or are you learning more about what you don't want? And in my parents' marriage, you know, there's both, and I would say in my observation, there's more of observing what I don't want in a marriage, or, you know, like my selection of a husband and my selection of a, my choice in terms of how we're set up is very much in rejection of what happened with my parents.
So you voiced having some insecurities about how good of a parent you are because you work full-time. Your mother worked full-time. Did you feel like that detracted from her parenting?
No. I didn't. My mother actually did a really good job on that front. You know, she, I think she did a really good job of making sure that I was cared for. You know, and I don't remember a band concert that my mom didn't go to. You know, I don't remember one drawing that I made in school that she didn't pay attention to and put on the refrigerator. I don't remember having trouble with any homework where she wasn't able to help me. You know, she was very attentive to me. My dad, on the other hand, no, not so much. And a lot of excuses were made because of his career. You know, a lot of excuses were made for him that, you know, he wasn't able to be here or there or pay attention to this or that because he was busy working on this goal of providing for our family. I think it's more from my dad's, my experience with my dad, that I get that really strong commitment, like I'm not going to, or I get that questioning of, oh gosh, am I going to do a good enough job of being present for Jane or making her know that I care for her, even though I'm working as much as I am.
So do you find yourself jealous of the mothers that just get to spend all of the time with their children? Or do you even get jealous of your own husband?
Yeah, but that was a good question you just asked.
Okay.
I think it's both. I mean, I think that any time, you know, well, for me, there's just guilt. I mean, that's probably part of my upbringing also. But sort of feeling like even when I'm leaving in the morning, especially on a Monday, which you're calling me on a Monday, so is very alive. This feeling is very alive in me today. You know, that I've had 2 days of being with Jane and over the weekend and it's been lovely, and I've really enjoyed every minute of my time with her. And, you know, then I get up and I have to leave and I have this intense jealousy that my husband gets to be with her. I really do. I have an intense jealousy that he gets to take her to the swing today. And he gets to call a friend and go meet at the Central Park Zoo. Or I'll get a pic. He sends me pictures on the phone every day, you know, during the day to say, oh, look what she's wearing, or, you know, we're at the swings or something like that, and I'll get a picture. You know, and I'm in the middle of my work, and if I click on that email, it can take me back a little bit. I feel like, oh, well, that's not fair. How does he get to be there? And I'm about to be on this boring conference call, you know, or I'm sitting here grinding, and they're at the park, and it's, like, a beautiful day, and I don't even have a window. I can't even see what the weather is. You know, it's like, I do have that the jealousy, and certainly I also feel, like, jealous / competitive with moms who get to stay home. But, again, then again, I have to remind myself, you know, these are my choices, and this is what I want, and I'm happy with it, and it's okay. And I'm not going to dwell on that. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to have the feeling.
Do you find that other women that are breadwinners in their families that you know feel the same way?
Not the ones that I've talked to, unfortunately.
What are they like?
And I've said things to other breadwinning moms that I've known, like, oh, isn't it so hard when you have to travel and you miss the baby so much? And they say, no, are you crazy? I love having a night to myself in the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Or, oh, gosh, are you crying, like, so much on the train on Monday morning? I'm always crying on the train on Monday morning. Like, no, I can't wait to get back to my office. So, I mean, and that could just be the ones that I've asked. I mean, I hope it is.
Right.
But I haven't had a lot of bonding, per se, over this struggle with other breadwinning moms. And then my sample, you know, my focus group is very, very small. I haven't had much time to really seek it out,
mm-hmm.
which is why I'm talking to you, because I'm hoping that you will seek it out.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much for speaking with me.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Yeah.
I'm very, very happy to do it.
It's very educational.
Great.
And inspiring.
Oh, great.
Okay, well, take care, Judy.
Thanks. I'll talk to you soon, I hope.
Yes.